Check 1 2. Check 1 2. Check 1 2. just a mystery eyes. I'm the daddy's eyes. Disney, gonna be some changes made.
religious man. I've always been a religious man. Let the banker in and leave the sin. Let the man let in the bed, let in the bed, let in the bed. Thank the man let in the bed, because the name is down. He thinks I ain't got to let the sins, because I talk slow, my money's spent. I ain't got to hold it against me, but it's been off the farm. Step up, daddy's in the daddy took four, and he got to take four, and his daddy took four. 5 generations on an unlocked door, and a loaded burglar alarm. Lots of pictures of a pretty family. Lots of pictures of a pretty family in the house that we was born. The house that stood through 5 tornadoes. Droughts, floods, and 5 tornadoes. Grabbed the rounds of an alligator through the watch the banker's storm. Can't see what even look me in the eye. Just face the man that's my child. In a paper and a friendly smile. He said the baby was done. Sound of years my dad spent. Sound of years my dad spent. Sound of years my dad spent, and I'm what the banker does.
Generally, like pretty much well-meaning people that end up doing horrible things because they feel like they don't have a choice. But kind of one of the exceptions on there is this song, which I wrote about my great uncle, who also didn't have a choice because he got drafted. But he ended up coming home a great man, and I love him. So anyway, he just turned 84. And just recently went to his Iwo Jima reunion that he's gone to every year since he got home from World War II. He was at Iwo Jima. And I've written so many songs about all these kind of shitty people, you know, like George Wallace or whoever. And it was the hardest thing in the world to actually write a song about a guy that just really was a good one. And is a good one.
Yeah.
I'm glad I got it written. So this is for him. This one's called The Sands of Iwo Jima.
She was at the movies and he said,
it's about 25 degrees hotter and about 100 times more humid. This is hotter than a goddamn armpit back there. And I come up here and it feels nice. It's awful good to be here. Thank you all so much for coming out. Thank you to the great folks here at the track room. I love you all. Thank you to my good friend Carrie, who I've known for 18 years, but this is the first time we've ever toured together for all these two decades. Maybe later on we can coach him up for a song or two with us. Yeah. Coming to that. The man's going to be for that. Well, let's do a louder one after that. No, not that one.
God.
first time I've learned that in about a year and a half. Y'all kick ass.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for that, too.
Yeah.
story song. The song's about a guy who's a sheriff in Tennessee back in the 60s. And he was almost let the story tell the song. How about that? Yeah. At any rate, they I'm gonna do two songs in a row to tell the same story. Oh, that's three men, actually. I think maybe four or five. Takes place back in the early 1970s, back in McNary County, Tennessee. Back in the days when Sheriff Buford Buster ran things around there. Sheriff Buford Buster was trying to clean up McNary County, Tennessee from all these bootleggers bringing crime and corruption and illegal liquor to his little dry county of South Jackson, Tennessee. Got ambushed. His wife was murdered, his house got blown up, and they made a movie about it called Walking Tall. It wasn't really a very good movie, but it became somewhat of a cultural phenomenon back in the part of the country where I grew up. So much so the local Chevy dealer decided maybe it'd be a good idea to have a sheriff. Buster come in and appear as leadership, maybe would sell some cars. And that summer, Sheriff Buford Buster showed up at Jean Crump Chevrolet in Tuscumbia, Alabama, and thousands of people showed up. The whole goddamn town was shut down. Poor Shovels, he was given the keys to a brand new Corvette. 2 weeks later, he ran that brand new Corvette into an embankment and he died on the straightaway in McNary County under mysterious circumstances. So they made a couple of sequels, and they were worse. They couldn't get Joe Don Baker, and they had to settle for Bo Swenson, and what really is good. But in all three of the Walking Tall movies, the Sheriff Buford Buster was raging a war against the Southern Crime Syndicate, a sort of redneck Goodfellas that he referred to as the Boys from Alabama. Who not so coincidentally come from our hometown. So we decided to be good Samaritans and write this song from their point of view. This song is called The Boys from Alabama. Got some smoking grass and some juice, a book and a song, a little opportunism in it. You take it from me, boy, take it from my friend. I have friends on the inside and friends on the outside. The sneak up beside you, so keep on the good side. Watching me. Friends and Cocktail I found, because I think there's one thing in the world that the world needs, it's another cocktail, and I think I've stumbled upon something, and this is going to be the secret to my fame and fortune when all this shit's over, because I'm going to patent my new cocktail, and I'm going to get rich on it, and I'm going to sit back and go see other people play. Y'all believe that? I just wondered if you believe it. But let me tell you my cocktail. It's called the nudie suit. Now, I wouldn't really wear a nudie suit because it just probably wouldn't really look right on me. I'd feel kind of out of place. But I hold them in high regard as a work of art and something that certainly, it's like a Stetson hat. Some men can wear it, some men can't. And it's important to know which side of that line you fall on. And to be comfortable with it, to be able to look in the mirror and say, you know, I'm just a man that can't wear a Stetson hat. And I'm a man who would look a little out of place in a nudie suit. And in all honesty, no matter how bitchin' that 59 Cadillac is, I just wouldn't really look right in it. And it's okay. But you can still drink one. A nudie suit equals one shot of Jack Daniels. Because like the nudie suit, it is a little bit country. It was made famous by people like Porter Wagner and Graham Parsons. Yeah. Next after a shot of Jack Daniels in you pour, and of course you have to have ice. You always start with ice because we're Southern. But you got the ice. You got the Jack Daniels in you pour in club soda. Because like a nudie suit, it's a little bit sparkly. And then you put in a splash of bitters. Because like the nudie suit, it's a little bit exotic. And finally, you cap it off with a slice of lime in honor of the nudie suit's California roots. And there, my friends, is the perfect new cocktail for all of your drunken needs. It is the nudie suit. And I highly recommend that you tip the shit out of your bartender when you try to explain to them what it is, because it'll make them much more cooperative. Thank you. With that in mind, y'all want to hear a story? Y'all want a short story or a long, rambling, incoherent one? Well, should I say a short, rambling, incoherent or a long, rambling? Let's go for the short, rambling. We'll go for the short. Let's start saying. This is going to be our, it's only our, second date or so. Let's take it a little slow. I don't want to run you off yet. When I first moved to Atlanta, Georgia, I needed a guitar, and I actually moved to Athens, Georgia. I was supposed to move to Atlanta, but that's another story. See, I'm already rambling and being incoherent. Your story is more rambling and more incoherent. So I moved to Athens, Georgia. I needed a guitar, and there wasn't any place at that time to buy one in Athens that wasn't just like a hack place. And so I kept driving back and forth to Atlanta looking for a guitar. And eventually I did find one, and it served me well for a bunch of years until it just got broke. But when I was looking for the guitar, I made this observation that in every single, this was 1994, but in 1994, in every single music store in the Atlanta, Georgia area, there was at least one piece of gear, probably in the back corner, cobwebs growing on it, in a road case with ARS stenciled and spray painted on it. And for those of you who don't know, ARS was the Atlanta Rhythm Section. And back in the 70s, the Atlanta Rhythm Section sold millions and millions and millions of records, and they toured and sold out shows all over the world. And then MTV came along, and guys who looked like Paul Goddard just didn't cut it on music video, and Atlanta Rhythm Section's sales slowed down considerably. Fame is a fleeting thing, and so all of a sudden those guys in the Atlanta Rhythm Section, they found themselves without their money coming in, but they still had those alimony bills and those house payments from the big houses outside of Doraville that they all bought on the lake, and they still had that cocaine dealer, and he expected to be paid. So first you sell the road case, and then later on you sell the piece of gear that the road case had in it. And so I was pondering that, like sometimes I spend my time when I'm drinking, pondering things that I probably shouldn't really ponder. And this song came out of it. This song is a love song, and this song's called Road Cases. Protect our face, protect our guitars, protect between his parents' Cadillacs without a scratch.
Ozzy Osbourne, Randy Rhoads,
story about the band we play in. Drive-by truckers are going to play about our 1,000th show this year, around somewhere around November. This story is about the first tour we ever went on. It took place back in 1997, early December, with another band out of Athens, Georgia called the Star Room Boys, a great band. Way up north. December. And I do remember asking Dave Marr from the Starring Boys if he thought it was a good idea for maybe us to go up there and tour then. But he was from Chicago and he assured me that us Southerners have a distorted view of what Northern winter is really like. And that it doesn't really get bad until at least January. So the next problem we had to solve was what to tour in, because at that time the drive-by truckers' only van was a 1978 Dodge Ram that we referred to as the Huffer. And I'm a man that's made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I've done a lot of stupid fucking shit, but I've never been dumb enough to take off on a 1,000-mile journey in something called the Huffer. But the Star Room Boys were nice enough to suggest that maybe we could combine gear and put our 6'6" bass player that we had at the time in with them, and the rest of us just find a car that we could all ride in. And upon careful consideration, we decided the only one worthy to do it was Cooley's wife's Mazda protege. So we headed up to Durham, North Carolina, and whatever rides we could hit to hook up with Cooley and his wife's Mazda protege. And he had done the math. Our first show was in Columbus, Ohio, and Cooley had done the math. And he had figured out that to get from Durham, North Carolina to Columbus, Ohio took exactly 6 hours. 6 hours into the drive, we were crossing the West Virginia state line, and that's when the rain started falling. And those roads got really windy, and the inclines off the side got really steep, and we'd be driving, and an 18-wheeler would pass us, and it was raining cats and dogs and pigs and sheep, and every time one of those 18-wheelers would pass us, the car would slide just enough to make our assholes tighten up real tight. And I was sitting in the back seat with my knees up against my cheekbones, but I managed to sneak a pen out and write this first verse. 90 miles an hour in the West Virginia rain, we're waiting in Columbus and we're later than we think. Cooley's at the wheel, Adam's at the brake, and I'm jammed in the back seat with my head between my knees. Jammed in the back seat with my head between my knees. Jammed in the backseat with my head between my knees. Had the shits, jitters, bad coffee, cigarettes, and couldn't drive a nail up my ass with a sledgehammer. Wind up in West Virginia. Winding time to load directly onto the stage and play our set, after which we came backstage and found the other band on the bill, the Lily Bandits, great band from Columbus, Ohio in them days, all laying around on couches puking in the garbage cans backstage. It seems that one of the Lily Bandits had one of those kids in daycare who'd come home with one of them kindergarten diseases. By the time we got to town, that kindergarten disease had gone all the way through the Lily Bandits and out on both sides, if you know what I mean. stay that night with the Lily Bandits. And the next day we drove to Chicago, and that's about the time that the rain turned to snow, and that kindergarten disease started winding its way through our two vehicles. And the next day we drove to Lansing, Michigan, and that great lake that we drove right past had turned into a sheet of ice. The wind was nice enough to pick the ice up off the river and off the Great Lake and drop it right there on that interstate for us to slip slide on all the way to Lansing, Michigan. And I woke up the next morning in Lansing, Michigan. There were 15 inches of snow on the ground, and that's when I started getting the kindergarten disease. That's also the day that we drove all the way from Lansing, Michigan to Buffalo, New York, without going through Canada, because we were holding drugs. So we had to go all the way to Ohio and then back up through Pennsylvania and New York. And the snowstorm turned into a full-scale blizzard, and they started closing down the interstate all around us. And I grew up in goddamn North Alabama. I ain't never seen no shit like that in my life. And I was sitting in the back seat of that goddamn monster protege, puking in a bag and cursing. God damn it, why are we here? And I wrote the second verse. 20 miles an hour in a Pennsylvania blizzard. It don't take a wizard to figure this out. North in the summer, south in the winter, Buffalo, December, what kind of dumbass shit is that? Sliding up the turnpike in the sleet and snow, barfing in the back and seats, thinking about my mama's warm sweet bed back home. Oh. It's an honor to have Kerry out with me this week, out playing with us. We played last night in Portland, and we're driving tomorrow down to San Francisco. We'll play Friday there and Saturday in L.A. mistake of getting cable. And it sucks, except for Sopranos. Even 60 and under is kind of a letdown this year, man. I don't like seeing Brenda with that. This is gross. I don't want to watch Brenda make out with anybody. And too much of that guy. I don't know. He's kind of creepy, too. But I do like the hot little redhead doctor. I like her. She's pretty. But at any rate, I can't resist watching the fucking news, and it just pisses me off. And I keep watching it, and I keep getting pissed off. And it's like a drug. It's like a drug. It's like a drug that you hate, that you're addicted to. And you keep watching it and keep getting pissed off and keep feeling like shit. And anyway, I wrote this song to Rupert Murdoch. And it's about Fox News Network. And the song's called Big Tits and Bush. And I was hoping they'd let us play it today at KEXPA, but they wouldn't. And then they informed me that I couldn't say tits or Bush on the radio. And I was like, wait a minute, Bush is our president. So without any further ado, this is my open letter to Rupert Murdoch and Fox News. But it applies to all them fuckers, because they're all fucking up. So this song's called Big Tits and Bush.
Thank you.
67 that actually wrote about a year after Medicare. A band I used to be in with Mike Cooley, Mike and I've been playing, Cooley and I've been playing 19 years this August. We used to have a band in the 80s called Adam's House Cat. And this was like our single, except it never came out of it. But if it reminds me of anything that did come out later, I had nothing to do with it, because our song's old. So this song's called Runaway Train.